Coming up on today's show...
You don't have to get inspiration from music. So if you feel like the sonic quality of something is going to be a big influence, I think it's totally fair if for you, you don't listen to it. But do other things that you can find inspiration in. Watch a movie, read a book, look at artwork.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on location in Orlando, Florida at PodFest Multimedia Expo, my guest is a producer, songwriter, mix engineer, and musical artist who also runs a wildly successful YouTube channel called Make Pop Music, which has almost 220,000 subscribers and a combined total of over 14.6 million video views. In addition to working with some of the top audio companies, he has worked with hundreds of artists spanning 39 countries and a variety of genres. He has more than 36,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, where his top five songs alone have gotten a combined total of close to 5.5 million streams. You've been hearing a song of his called 100 Ways. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Austin Hull.
Hey, Bruce, thank you for having me. I am so excited to be here.
Thank you. Thanks ever so much for coming by to sit and talk with me today. Let's get started by having you talk first all about the song of yours that was just playing called 100 Ways.
Yeah, so I picked 100 Ways to send you in to play first because it's one of the songs that I kind of first found any kind of success with as an artist. So 100 Ways basically started as just an off day that I didn't have any production clients. I didn't have anything to do for the YouTube channel or make pop music or any other stuff. And sometimes when I have days off, I'll take a nice little creative break and just make something for myself and just kind of let whatever happens, happens. And 100 Ways was kind of the outcome of exactly that. I just, you know, had a free afternoon, kind of had some inspiration. I kind of wanted to make a dark, you know, gritty pop song with like hip hop and R&B and, you know, pop influence. And so I kind of just took all of the genres and all of the artists that I was listening to and figured out how to kind of merge those into something that I felt like could be relatable for people who might be similar fans of similar artists, but still put my own twist on it. So 100 Ways was kind of just, I think it was the second song that I was really trying to like release as an artist in a big string of songs. And yeah, that was the one that still to this day, I have the most people message me about, the most people find it. It has the most streams on all of the platforms. But really, it was just kind of the child of me having a little bit of free time and making a song that only I wanted to make with no input from anybody else. I love working as a team, but sometimes when you make so many records and you're part of so many things happening, you just want to take a little bit of time and just make something purely for the fun of it. And that's pretty much what 100 Ways was.
I think of 100 Ways and I think of the James Ingram song, which is from like the 1980s or maybe the 90s. What is your 100 Ways about? What is the story in 100 Ways?
So my 100 Ways is basically, I like to write a lot of narrative when I'm writing lyrics. A little bit of backstory on me. I'm 29 right now. I've been married since I was 18. So wow. Sometimes when I write songs, I'll write them in kind of a fictional voice or kind of a fictional story. So 100 Ways, I was like, it would be fun to play around with the idea of me in my mid-20s going out, going to a nightclub or a bar and kind of just seeing somebody that like instantly catches your eye and just writing about that instant attraction and then basically finding 100 different ways that you could basically make them remember you by the end of the night. And wow. So to me, it's always fun to kind of push myself as a writer and write about things that aren't necessarily my experience, but they're things that I've seen friends deal with or you see in pop culture and movies and TV shows. And so for me, I was just like, what is my version of an instant attraction hookup song? And that was basically what I did for 100 Ways.
And I like that description because audience, as I always encourage you to go listen to the full uninterrupted version, meaning Bruce not talking over it and the entire song instead of just the partial track that you get from me. I think, Austin, your setup there makes it sound, and obviously people got the flavor for it when I was playing what I did play in the intro, but I think your description gives people the flavor for, hey, this is going to be a fun song. This is something that I want to go and find because it sounds like it's got a great story, and you did some good scene setting for it too.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. I read that you have been involved in music your entire life. What does that mean in terms of when you were a kid? What were you doing in your youth that was music oriented?
Yeah, great question. I think basically some of my earliest memories, I'm either listening to music, singing music. I remember I was probably 3 and Toy Story had come out when I was a kid. And there was kind of the cassette player toy that everybody knows from Toy Story. And so I had that. It would actually play cassettes. And I remember just playing anything on that my dad would give me. So like I would play Hanson. I would play Van Halen. I would play Motley Crue. I would play Etta James. I would literally just play all kinds of music and just walk around with that. And I remember car rides where I would just listen to music and sing along. Growing up, my dad was a drummer and played a little bit of guitar. So, you know, I'd go bang around on his drum set. I'd fiddle with his guitar. And music was always just something that, like, made sense to me. And then when I was 9 years old, I took my birthday money. I bought my first guitar for myself, really got obsessed with it, basically played guitar any spare moment that I had. And then as a teenager, kind of did the natural thing, fell into, you know, playing with local bands. I started singing a little bit more. I started getting into like synthesizers and keys. And then, you know, going into college, I just kind of transformed into doing production, kind of as a necessity to make demos for my band.
But let me break down some of what you just said.
Sure.
Because on Instagram, I see content where you're shown with a keyboard and I don't see guitar at all. So is it a case of I transitioned away from guitar, I write entirely on piano? Is it I write on both? But just walk us through all that for starters.
Yeah, I think it's still pretty 50-50. We've been doing a lot more guitar, especially like on our YouTube channel, Make Pop Music. We've been doing a lot more with guitar recently. Like at the time of us recording this, our video last week was how to make a song like an artist named McGee. And that's basically all guitar based. And we've just been kind of incorporating that more. I think for a long time, it was probably a little bit more forward-facing with keys because guitar wasn't super, super prevalent in pop music for a few years. And now that it's making a really strong comeback, it kind of gives me the opportunity to highlight guitar a little bit more in content. I love writing on acoustic guitar. I don't really have a preference. It just depends on what I grab and kind of what the melody's fitting over. But I do think that if an artist comes in my studio and we're just fiddling around with chord progressions, there's probably a 50-50 chance that it's either guitar or normally just like a pretty basic piano or key sound if it's all going to be, you know, MIDI programming.
Okay. So take us back to 100 ways you described you had a day when you weren't really doing anything. This would be a good day to write a song. What did you write that on?
That was all written on keys. So that song doesn't have really any guitar in it, I don't think.
Yeah.
It's mainly like one synth bell that happens throughout the entire thing, and then a lot of bass, a lot of 808, a lot of drum production. But when I'm doing something like that that's going to be mostly synthesized, typically what I'll do is I'll just kind of write the chord progression or the main melody, and then I'll just sing most of the song over top of that, and then I'll start adding the production a little bit later. So it's not too different than if I was playing chords on an acoustic guitar, but that song was 100% just find a cool, catchy little key melody. And then the vocal melody had kind of already been in my head. So it kind of happened naturally.
And when you sent me the song and I listened to both songs, that one in particular, I told myself, well, this is obviously a piano song. I could have also been influenced by, like I said, the fact that I spent so much time looking at your Instagram and told myself, I guess he doesn't play guitar. So let's go back to that. So you were playing guitar first, then you moved to piano and synth, and you mentioned about singing. All those things, self-taught, you had lessons in one of them, you had lessons in all of them. What did all that look like in terms of immersing yourself into, because I'm going to consider your voice as an instrument too, of course.
Thank you. All self-taught.
Wow.
I'm not classically trained at all. I never did band in school or anything like that.
Wow.
I never learned how to read music or notate or anything like that.
Mm.
With guitar, I would do a lot of like tab reading. So that was about as technical as I got. And then I've always just been kind of an by-ear guy. So even playing guitar growing up, I would listen to a song 10 times, figure out the chords, and then put my own spin on it. And then moving across I'm definitely not opposed to training, but for me, music has just been such a personal thing in my life. I kind of like the problem-solving method of doing it by ear and kind of figuring it out. But I have done, a little bit of, like, music theory training, just making sure that if I'm in a room with artists, I can kind of hold my own. But other than that, not super classically trained, didn't play in band in high school.
But you are, quote-unquote, only 29, so you're at the age where you did have YouTube available for you. So not even... I spent a whole summer watching YouTube videos about guitar or about piano or about voice.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm definitely obsessed with learning and with knowledge. I never followed any curriculum, but growing up playing guitar, I would watch guitar playthrough videos. Synthesizers, I'll watch instrument walkthroughs and kind of see how a synth works. I'll always like read the manual when I buy gear. I'll watch production tutorials. Learning how to produce, it was a big... process of digging through a bunch of information and kind of figuring out what works for me and what doesn't work for me. So without YouTube, it probably would have taken me a lot longer, but I've never done any kind of like classical training, professional training. Yeah. It's all just been things that are readily available for anybody.
And you might have noticed how I smiled when you said about reading the manual, because I'm very much I get a new piece of something, I'm reading the manual first, sometimes even before I even turn the thing on or plug it in, if not that, and as I'm turning it on. So it's nice to meet someone else who's right there doing the same thing.
I feel like you have to. If you want to get your money out of it, everything has so many things that you would never realize just looking at the surface. And, companies spend a lot of time and money making those manuals. I figure I might as well read them.
Although Austin and I are recording this interview on location in Orlando, on the day that it comes out, I will actually be flying home to Tampa from Los Angeles, where I will have gone to after the NAMM show in Anaheim. I will be home for all of 1 week before flying back to the West Coast, as I will be speaking at the 21st San Francisco Writers Conference from February 6th to the 9th. I have been mentioning on the last several episodes that event is for writers of literature, books, not music. But I want to highlight something that's happening on that last date. You do not have to be attending that conference to attend a podcasting masterclass that I will be putting on February 9, in conjunction with the San Francisco Writers Conference. If you or someone you know are or will be in the area then, do visit sfwriters.org now to register to attend that 3-hour session. I am going to help attendees of that masterclass to start a podcast, as in that day, on the spot, regardless of the topic, regardless of the format. Meanwhile, keep up with this show, the weekly e-newsletter, social media, as I announce more cities and dates where hopefully we can meet, so I can say thank you in person for listening to Now Hear This Entertainment. Austin, we were talking about the different instruments, including your voice, as I said, but from the intro, we know that you do also sing, that I just alluded to. However, I'd also refer to you as a producer and a mix engineer. Out of those four roles, singer, songwriter, producer, mix engineer, which do you consider yourself to be first? Which do you consider yourself to be second, and then third and fourth?
I would definitely say producer first, probably songwriter second, engineer, mixing, mastering, whichever, third, and then singer slash artist, probably fourth.
Now, I asked this recently of a guest, how easy is it or isn't it to separate Austin the songwriter from the producer? Or maybe you're going to tell me, when I'm producing someone, I'm writing with them.
I would say probably 95% of the time that I'm producing for an artist, I'm giving writing input. So I have a pretty personal connection when I'm doing a lot of production with the artists that I'm working with. And so I'm never really afraid to co-write with them or throw my two cents in or have somebody in the room and kind of produce as an extension of songwriting. I think both of those for me kind of fall into the same category of almost being one thing. And that's just song creation, whether I'm going to be the one singing and releasing the song or it's an artist or a band. So for me, I feel like a good production is only as good as a song. And so if I'm starting to produce something and I feel like the songwriting could be better, I'm always going to step in and at least give my opinion. And if, people want to listen, we can figure it out. And if they don't want to listen, it's their song at the end of the day. I'll still do my role as a producer.
Now there's going to be up-and-comers who are listening to Now Hear This Entertainment, this episode and many others, to learn from the guests. And I wonder, walk them through what you just described as it relates to whether Austin gets a songwriting credit or not. You're there to be the producer, but you are a songwriter and you're contributing. Is that, you know what, Bruce, I just leave it up to the artist. It's their project. They want to give me a, or is it, hey, look, hold on a second, because there's some money to be made if I'm listed as a writer on it.
That's a great question. So for me, I'm normally expecting / negotiating for songwriting credit. If I'm giving input on lyrics and melody and song structure, to me, I almost think of it as like if the song were played only on an acoustic guitar, if I make changes that would impact that, it's songwriting more than production. So if an artist comes to me and they have a work tape and everything feels good and I'm just doing sound design and, you know, layering things and, you know, synthesis, I don't really need a songwriting credit on that. I didn't do anything instrumental to the song. But if somebody comes to me and I'm writing lyrics, I'm writing melody, I'm, you know, helping them reformat what they're saying, that's where songwriting kind of comes in. So I would say 90% of the time that an artist is kind of starting a song with me, it's also going to be songwriting credit. But sometimes, you know, you get a work for hire person that just needs you to make what they've already written sound better, and that's production.
Okay. Because I am wondering about those uncomfortable situations where, because of your vast experience as a producer and because you are a songwriter, you look at a song and you already know this song needs some help, and you have to delicately say that to this person who has signed to hire you as the producer, and you have to gently tell them, this is in your best interest. I really think this bridge is really weak, or I really think this second verse needs some more work.
Right. That's definitely a process of just building trust with artists and kind of building authority with whatever services you're going to be offering. So a couple different scenarios that could kind of outline that. If an artist is coming to work with me in person and we're starting with nothing, it's a collaborative process the whole way. There's not really that awkward tension of like, you know, I have to crush an idea. I always tell everybody, when we're in a room and we're writing on the spot, like, we're all going to have awful ideas and we're all going to have great ideas. And there needs to be no ego attached to that. Something that I might be married to might not make the final song, and that's okay. When I'm being hired to, you know, if somebody reaches out via my website and they're like, hey, Austin, I want you to produce a song for me. If they have a work tape and a demo, I'll kind of tell them before I even allow them to kind of hire me and start the process, hey, this song needs work here. Okay. Like, it's not ready for full production. And it's just about being open and honest. That might upset some people and it might not be what they're looking for. But I think that as people kind of get better, get more credits, get more experience, your opinion will be listened to. And at the end of the day, like I said, it's the artist's song, not mine. So they have the final say. But they're paying me a lot of money for the experience of writing over 1,000 songs. If they want to listen to me, I'll give my opinion. If they don't, I'll give it and they can just do their own thing anyway. It doesn't really keep me up at night, but it's just about kind of going into it with tact and kind of telling them, hey, you're not a bad songwriter. That idea could just be better, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And to your point about whether you get a songwriting credit or not, I think maybe the lesson for the audience member right now is better safe than sorry. Ask the producer up front, are you going to be looking for a songwriting credit on this? That way you're not so nervous and scared that you don't ask, and then you're surprised at the end when it is expected and you weren't planning for that.
For sure. I think that that's kind of where contracts come into play and just communication before a session even starts. So like, it's very different depending on where you're going to a session. If you go into Nashville, it's pretty much expected that everybody in the room when that song is going to be created will have equal publishing, equal splits and points. If you do it in LA, you might have to fight a little bit more for either your publishing on the songwriter side or your master split on the point side. With that said, it's all just about being honest and open. And to be honest, you might get burned by an artist. And if that's the case, it's one song. You just make a mental note, hey, I'm probably not going to work with him again. It's going to happen. Like, at some point in the music industry, you might get taken advantage of. You might have a bad deal. You might be disappointed by somebody trying to slight you out of a little bit of credit or money. Reputations kind of mean everything in the music industry, and that will end up getting around. So just be a good hang in the studio. Do good work. I think that artists that are worth working with and labels that are worth working with will allow you to voice your opinion for the amount of credit and payment and reward that you kind of get for your input on a song.
Great lessons. We established before that you have been involved in music your entire life. When the audience looks you up on iTunes, they're going to see releases dating back to 2017. Was that just inevitable, meaning like a natural progression, or was there something that occurred then that signaled to you, I think it's time, I'm ready to start recording original music? Because I wonder if there are people out there who are just starting out that are waiting, they're looking for some kind of sign to know when they're ready.
Yeah, that's a great question. I had released quite a bit of music before what's still publicly available. So I was in a band in high school. We had a couple EPs out, did a bunch of work. I was totally fine. You can probably still find those floating around on YouTube, but I don't think the distro got renewed. And then going into when I was in college, I was producing a lot. I was making a lot of music for myself, and a lot of that would just go on something like SoundCloud. I wasn't really selling it or distributing it. I did release a couple songs probably in 2014 and 2015 that have since been removed just because I feel like they're not, they don't really fit the rest of my catalog.
Sure.
They were very, very early, and I think they're not a great representation of the quality of work that I can do sonically and thematically. But I've always been that person to kind of really stand on the matter of, like, you shouldn't withhold all of your creativity. So at some point you just have to make something and release it. I get so sad when I see people with hard drives full of music that they're just not releasing because they just don't have the confidence, or they're scared that it's not going to do well. I've never really expected anything when I release a song. I kind of just release them for me. Same with a lot of the artists that I work with. I'm never trying to write a hit or make a hit. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. But to me, it's just like, I've made this. At least one person in the world will enjoy it. So if they can find it, that's enough for me. And you just put it out into the world and let it happen.
But you just gave some great advice, which is, you said, there was some stuff that I released that it's not really representative of what I do. So I took it down. So you can tell yourself, am I ready? Am I waiting for a sign? Look, just release it. And if 5 years later, if 10 years later, you go, you know what I released back then? Man, that's not.
Yeah, you can
take
always
it down.
Edit.
But to sit and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. And you might be writing some gems.
You might be. That's the thing, is like, it's kind of a mental thing to where if at the certain point you don't think that you're good enough to release it, is it that you're actually not good enough, or is it that your mentality is telling you you're not good enough? Because if it's your mentality, the hard truth is that, like, you're probably always going to think you're not good enough, no matter even if you're writing songs that could win a Grammy. If your issue is just general confidence, it's like what people say when they talk about, like, weight loss. It's like, well, if you don't love yourself before you lose all that weight and get extremely healthy, you could lose all the weight in the world. You're still probably going to have body image issues. And it's the same with releasing your music. Like, if you're not confident enough to be proud of what you've done and release it, you're probably never going to get to that point, even if you've gotten monumentally better, technically speaking.
So if someone's listening to this interview and they're saying, oh, my gosh, Bruce and Austin are talking about me, I'm ready to quit music because I just don't think my stuff is good, I'm never going to release anything, could they contact you and say, Austin, please give me your honest opinion, because otherwise I'm ready to fold the tent on music. And will you listen to it for them and say, fold the tent? Or are you kidding me? Why aren't you recording?
I mean, they can send me whatever. Sometimes I will say I get a little bit backed up on messages, so if I don't respond, I do apologize in advance. However, I would say that my opinion on your music really shouldn't matter if you keep making music or not.
Why do you say that?
I think you should make music for yourself.
Because
I think at the end of the day,
my point is, an uninterested third party. Like, don't ask your boyfriend, your spouse, your parents, because they're going to tell you, you're amazing, you're talented, why aren't you? Of course they're going to say that they love you. But an uninterested third party who has the credentials that Austin Hall does could listen to it and say, this is really good. Why are you beating yourself up? You need to record this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely happy to kind of give people the positive affirmations if the quality is there. But I think either way, it's more so that kind of like looking for external validation. Like, I don't think that you should make music only because you think that you're good at it or because you want to get really good at it. You should make music because it feels good to make it, whether it's good enough to release, good enough to show people, or if you just keep it on a hard drive forever for yourself. Like, kind of a comparison is, yesterday I went golfing for the first time ever, and I went out there and I was like, I know that I'm going to be terrible, but my goal today is to just have fun, get some fresh morning air, hang out with my friend, and make a good memory. And at the end of the day, I wasn't good at golf, but I had a great time. So did I go home and buy a set of clubs so I can keep doing it? Absolutely. I'm not going golf because I think that I'm going to be Tiger Woods. I'm going golf because I enjoyed it. And I think that making music is the same. I think that it is hard to kind of get past that point of needing the external validation. But some of my favorite artists in the world, I would say, are not technically amazingly proficient, but they make really cool, really interesting stuff that feels really honest to themselves. And somebody will resonate with it. There's going to be a fan for everybody, no matter what. No matter if you make pop, metal, country, jazz fusion, polka, it doesn't matter. And so I think at the end of the day, it's really just about making music that you want to create. And if you feel comfortable enough to release it, then great. And if you don't, that's okay. You can always just have that for yourself. I don't think that music has to kind of be an end goal of like get famous, make it a business. Music can just be a hobby and a passion and a way to express yourself.
An audience, Austin and I are just meeting for the first time, but I'm here to tell you, he's true to who he says he is. Because if you caught it before, he said, when I record and release music, I'm just doing it for myself. I'm not trying to do it for the unwashed masses and to get all kinds of downloads and fame. So whether you realize it or not, Austin, you just backed up that statement with exactly what you just described. Look, if you just want to do it for yourself to say, I did it and it's on my hard drive, and if I want to play it for my kid someday or for my buddy or whatever, great. If not, like, I just feel good that I recorded something.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of the day, you know, not everybody who can paint is going to sell a painting, but you could have cool stuff to hang up in your own house.
You could
have cool things of just like, oh, I remember that I was either in a really good place or a really bad place when I made this painting. And it's kind of just a stamp on time. And I think of making a song in the same way. I think that it's great that some of my songs have millions of streams, but they don't mean any more or any less to me than a song that nobody's ever heard.
Wow. So we had led up to all that by me asking you about you in 2017, I said, and then you gave us some history of what was recorded and released before that. But I'm going to say, humor me, I'm going to say you launch an artist career in 2017, yet you eventually decide, I'm going to offer services to other artists. So what made you decide to branch out and not just stick with your own artist career?
It's actually the reverse for me. So I was doing music professionally before I released as an artist. So I was already doing a bunch of songwriting, doing a bunch of production, doing a bunch of mixing. So for me, it was more so, can I find time to basically not book projects with others and just make things for myself? And so that's why I was saying when I made, you know, 100 Ways or even, you know, the next song that we'll talk about in a little while, Clutch, or really any of my catalog as an artist, my artist profile is purely a hobby for me. My career is songwriting and production for other people. And I've been full-time on that now for, I think, going on 8 years. And I was part-time on it for a couple years before that. So for me, it's been exactly what you said, but just the opposite. So finding time to do things for myself, do things as an artist. It's hard when you're a freelance independent producer to be like, well, today, instead of, you know, doing a project for XYZ and making guaranteed money, I'm just going to, you know, mess around in my DAW and whatever happens, happens. But I think those days are really good for creativity. It's nice when you're used to having to accommodate everybody and make a song that is pleasing the artist, the manager, the label. It's nice for once in a while to just be like, you know what? None of that matters. I'm just going to make whatever I want to make. And if I want to release it, cool. And if I don't, at least I didn't have to make something that had really tight parameters today.
Wow, what a breath of fresh air that is. Did I miss, I think you said it very quickly in passing earlier on, did you go to school, did you go to college for music production?
I did not. I went to college to be an English teacher.
Oh, I thought you had said something about starting into music production like after high school or something like that, but I guess you're going to say it was just kind of self-initiated.
Yeah, just I got into music production because in high school I was in a like a post-hardcore rock band. And we were going to studios and we were recording, but we were a bunch of, like, you know, broke high school kids. And, you know, busing tables and waiting restaurants doesn't make crazy money for 5, 16, 17-year-olds. So eventually I was just like, you know what? I'm going to learn how to record really, really basic demos so we could at least filter our ideas down. So I kind of learned the real basic stuff when I was, like, 17. Didn't really get even a semi-decent setup, like a Focusrite Scarlett and, like, I think Line 6 had the Pod Farm interface that they had. I think I got that when I was like 18. But then once I kind of got the real basic setup, I just fell in love with the process of getting to make a song from start to finish. And once I could take an idea out of my head and put it into a computer and listen back, I kind of just got obsessed with it. I think growing up playing multiple instruments, being around drums and guitar and singing and synthesizers, I was already familiar with most of the compositional aspects. But being in a band, like I said earlier, it's just another form of creativity with certain limitations. Like, the whole band has to be happy with a song. The guitarist is going to change an idea. The drummer's going to change an idea. And that's great. I love collaboration. But when I was able to just download a DAW and say, you know what? This is exactly how I feel like the song should be. That to me was like a light bulb moment. I was like, oh, I love doing this.
Nice.
And so
nice.
In college, like, if I wasn't in school, if I wasn't working, and if my wife wasn't at home, all I did was make music. I don't think I turned my TV on for like the first 2.5 years of college.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. I'm joined today on location in Orlando, Florida at PodFest Multimedia Expo by producer, songwriter, mix engineer, and musical artist Austin Hull. Visit his official website at austinhull.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Stick around because we will be talking about his other website, his wildly successful YouTube channel that goes with it that I referred to at the start of the show. Austin's original music is widely available from the likes of Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, and more. At the bottom of austinhull.com, look for logos for Twitter, Instagram, and his artist YouTube channel. Every once in a while, I take a step back and realize that for someone who is a publicist, I leave that important nugget out of this podcast. That's coming up on its 11-year anniversary in just under 3 weeks. This podcast began in February 2014 because of the music clients I was serving. And fast forward to present day, and now here this Incorporated, my PR agency, has clients across the country to also include authors, a nonprofit, and a client that is neither in music nor a writer nor a nonprofit, kind of a wild card. If you or someone you know are in need of PR services, get in touch for a casual conversation to get to know each other, talk about goals and objectives, the services that Now Hear This offers, and more. Social media for this podcast or even the podcast at nhte.net email are great ways to get in touch. Austin, since I don't live too far from here over in the greater Tampa Bay area, you as an Orlando resident also know the many, many great reasons to live here in the Sunshine State. But I'm curious, with all that you've done and are doing in music, has there ever been some consideration to taking your talents to, say, New York or LA, or who knows, maybe Nashville, Las Vegas, Austin, Atlanta, New Orleans, somewhere other than where we are today?
I mean, there's definitely been the temptation, right? We all know that, like, LA is the hub for music. New York has a big scene. Nashville is huge right now. I think for me, I can get to the point where I have a really unhealthy work-life balance. And I think that if I were to be constantly in a city like LA or even New York, where the cost of living is just so high, it's always a rat race to compete with everybody, I don't think that I would thrive there. Mentally, I like the pacing of Orlando. Orlando has a big airport. I can fly to New York in 2 hours. I can fly to Nashville in like just under an hour. LA is a little bit farther, but if an artist really needs me out in LA, they'll fly me out. It's not that big of a deal. I love New York City. I really like Nashville. LA is not quite my speed, but for me, I'm turning 30 this year. It's really about, like, where do I want to have a life? Where do I want to have a family? Where do I want to, you know, have all of my friends? And Orlando's been home for me. And so I don't think that the professional advantages are good enough for me to sacrifice everything that my wife and I have kind of built here and take that to somewhere like LA or New York. Even if it might bring more opportunities, I think it also brings a lot more struggles that we're not currently dealing with. And so we've kind of set roots here. We love it. I'll still travel to all of those places a few times a year, but I would have to get like a major, major, you know, $6 million plus publishing deal to move out to LA. Like, I'm not that interested in doing it.
Well, let's face it. There are people in New York right now who, just because of the weather, would certainly love to be here right
exactly.
now. There's even people in Nashville where they're getting snow and 20-degree temperatures that are going, Florida looks pretty good right about now.
I love Florida. I lived in Orlando as a kid. I lived in Pensacola in high school. That's where I met my wife. We went down to school in Boca Raton. So I've been in Florida for most of my life. I moved around a little bit as a kid. My stepfather was in the military, so it was mostly Southeast. But Florida has just always felt like home for me, especially Central Florida. So it would take a real, real lot for me to go out to LA or up to New York.
You,
I always
and me
say,
both.
If I could have a first, second home, New York City would be my first, second home. Like, if I had just money to play with, I'm getting a place in New York to go to a few times a year. But I couldn't live there. I can't keep up with the pace. It would kill me after probably about a year.
Yeah. Let's start diving into Make Pop Music, which I said back in the intro has almost 220,000 subscribers on YouTube to go with a combined total of over 14.6 million video views. Tell us first how Make Pop Music came to be.
So Make Pop Music actually started as a Facebook group. So as I was getting into music production, you know, being self-taught and kind of relying on the internet to be my resource, I was really into the rock and metal scene. There were a lot of Facebook groups and online forums for that specific genre. But when I got interested in doing pop music, there really weren't any. So I kind of made a Facebook group just to get like-minded people who wanted to share demos, have ideas, share production techniques, kind of geek out about pop music. I just made a little Facebook group for that. And at the time that I made it, I was just doing, you know, work on the side. It wasn't my professional career or anything like that. But I would always be posting things that I was doing. And, you know, I'd meet people through there. People would be interested in hiring me for freelance production. And so the group just got bigger and bigger. And I think within like the first year, I think there was like 8,000 members in there.
Whoa.
And it got to the point where I was just posting so much because I was the one who created the group. I was interested in utilizing it. I was just always posting what I was doing. And people were like, oh, these drums sound crazy. Can I, you know, where can I find them? And it was things that I was just making. So I packaged them together, did a little sample pack, put that out. That did really well. If people had questions about, you know, something that they heard in one of my tracks, I had no problem making a little tutorial about it. And so the educational aspect of Make Pop Music all kind of just happened because people were asking for it. It was never meant to be a business. It was never meant to kind of like be a main focus of mine. But I'm not a big gatekeeper with information. So, you know, if you hear something that I worked on and you like the way that the synth sounds and I can't explain it in a couple paragraphs, I'll just make a YouTube tutorial for it. And so that's what I was doing. I was very honest at the time that, like, I don't have any credits. I'm not a big authority. I'm just showing you how me as a person is doing this thing.
Wow.
And people kind of resonated with it. And so we did that for a couple years where we weren't super strict with like an upload schedule. We hadn't like really monetized, you know, the Facebook group. We had a couple little products that people could get. But then in, I believe it was late 2018, early 2019, my wife had quit her marketing job so we could move up to Orlando from Boca. And she was like, hey, other than, you know, starting a new marketing job, basically making minimum that you could make at a company, what if I kind of helped you turn Make Pop Music into like a full thing? Because at that time, the Facebook group, it had like 25,000 members.
Oh my gosh.
I think our YouTube channel had like 13 or 15,000 subscribers. And so she came on, we redid our website, made a couple new products, and we've been sticking to basically a video a week, minus a couple weeks here and there. And when that happened, it skyrocketed immediately. We had a couple videos do hundreds of thousands of views in a week. And it ended up kind of becoming a business. So now she runs. I really just like make the tutorials for it. But she does all of our product design, all of our, you know, content management. So it's been really cool, basically, being able to run a company with my wife. But it was all an accident because I just made a resource that I wanted to use myself.
So cool. So cool. I said at the start of the show that you have worked with hundreds of artists spanning 39 countries in a variety of genres. Do I take that to mean that you are open for business to artists regardless of their location? And if so, is this like an A&R person at a label where someone really needs to impress you to get your attention? Or is it more like, say, a commercial studio where it's, nope, as long as you can afford my rate, get in touch and I'll work with you?
I've definitely had to be a little bit more selective over the years just because I get so many inquiries and I only have a certain amount of hours in the day. So for me, I'm not like I'll only work with labels. I actually love not working with labels. I love working with independent artists. So kind of the inflow is people find me, they can reach out on my website, give me all of their info. If they have demos attached, that. And if it sounds like a good fit, if it sounds like an artist that I can work well with, communication's going to be good, creative vision's going to align, I'll work with anybody, even if it's their first release ever. I'm not too concerned about it having to be something that might get a plaque or might, you know, get on Discover Weekly on Spotify. I like working with bigger artists, but to me, it's not a necessity. With that said, I do have to be a little bit selective just because, unfortunately, I can't work with everybody. But I try to just pick things that I actually do want to work on because they'll come out better.
So on a related note then, talk about working on your own music projects versus, say, mixing and producing other artists. Very, very different, or maybe not as much as some people might think because you've done your own Austin Hall music projects?
Yeah, I think it just comes back to, like, I love making music with other people. I love collaborating. But sometimes, you know, you make 100 records a year, and I'm just like, I'm tired. I feel like my idea tank is running low. I need to just either take a little bit of time off or make something that has no goal whatsoever. And so for me, that's the biggest difference for when I'm just sitting down and making something for fun or if I'm sitting down and making something because somebody is expecting output from me.
But what if you've just created an Austin Hull original song that you're super excited about and the next day you're working with somebody else? How tough is it to turn off the song you did yesterday for yourself and not have that bleed into this other artist's song and their vision for that so that you're not forcing a sound from yesterday into their project?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for me, I listen to so much different music and I work in so many different genres. I can kind of compartmentalize sounds and styles. So on a random week, I might have, let's take this week, for example. Today's Friday. This week, I've done a country pop song. I've done a country rock song. I've done a dark pop kind of R&B song similar to what the listeners would have heard in the intro. And then I've done kind of like a radio top 40s pop song, all within 1 week. So for me, I just have to go into the day knowing what's expected of me, and then I can normally get my brain there pretty quick. And if a project is not what's right in front of me, I'm not too concerned about what artist A might have had working yesterday or what I might have had working on Tuesday, and then today I'm with artist B. I'm able to kind of focus the session on the goal of that session and the sound of that session, but that's just, I think, come as kind of a natural extension of listening to a lot of music, working in a lot of music, and kind of trying to change my style decently regularly so I don't get kind of pigeonholed into doing the same thing all the time.
I feel like you're gifted to be able to do that. Any advice for songwriters out there who do suffer from, I can't listen to the radio for 24 hours before I'm going to write, or I can't listen to anything?
Yeah, I think you don't have to get inspiration from music. So if you feel like the sonic quality of something is going to be a big influence, I think it's totally fair if for you, you don't listen to it, but do other things that you could find inspiration in. Watch a movie, read a book, look at artwork, watch an interior design video, go for a walk. I think there's so many aspects in life that you can find inspiration and art and beauty, and it doesn't always have to be from music. I love music, and I don't have quite the problem of getting stuck in a sound. I will say, though, if let's say I'm listening to a lot of similar artists. Let's say I'm listening to a lot of like Drake and Party Next Door and The Weeknd, and I'm just listening to that genre over and over and over again. It will start to naturally influence. So if I know that I'm going to be working on a song in that style, I might just listen to like film scores for that week, or I might just listen to podcasts, or I might listen to, you know, 60s and 70s jazz. I try to not burn myself out with the sound. And so if I know I'm doing country music that week, I'm not going to be listening to a lot of country music. I'm probably going to listen to old soul.
And that's what I'm thinking is the songwriter out there who writes a song and they go, oh, shoot, I think Luke Bryan already just did something similar to that. Well, then don't listen to Luke Bryan. Don't listen to maybe any country music. Right. And all those activities that you cited that they could participate in, your influences are going to come from going on that walk or from going and playing golf or from watching a movie. And it's not going to be written in a style that sounds just like Luke Bryan.
100%. I think it's especially as you get into being a professional creative where you do kind of have to turn it on in a session. Like, I don't really have the choice of having like an off day where an artist comes in and I'm like, inspiration's not really hitting. But you learn how to kind of just build up a pool of inspiration. And if I'm getting to the point where sessions are getting harder, I'm feeling less inspired, I'm taking a little bit of time off. I'm getting out of the studio. I'm not listening to anything similar. I'm going to go watch movies. I'm going to go hang out with friends. I'm going to make life experiences that I can turn into music later. And for me, that's a much better cheat code than putting together a playlist and saying like, okay, well, how do I make a song that sounds almost identical to all of these, but different enough to not get sued? I think references are great, but if it's pigeonholing you, then understand your parameters, but go find the baseline inspiration somewhere else. That's fine.
I like it. I like it. Since I mentioned at the start of the show that you have worked with some of the top audio companies, let's talk about hardware and software a little bit.
Sure.
What are you using these days? What do you really like? Who do you want to shout out?
Great question. I actually just recently swapped my entire studio over to the new MacBook M4 Max. So I'm completely portable now. I had been on like a Windows custom build desktop. So that to me has been a big game changer of being able to just take my session. I'm looking at my backpack right here. I could pull up a session right now and like need no other equipment. With that said, in the studio, I've got a lot of software and I've got a good bit of hardware. My primary setup is that computer. Interface is an RME UFX2, and then I've extended the ins and outs with a Farofish Pulse 16 and an Audient ASP800. Other than that, I have some analog preamps. I have the Rupert Neve Designs New In, the Heritage Audio HA81A, which is essentially like a 1073 style preamp with an 1081 style EQ. Sounds super, super great. I've got some compressors from Audioscape and ZNH Designs. For my monitoring, I'm using ATC SEM25s with a DynAudio subwoofer. I've got a lot of synths in the studio. I've got a Moog Subsequent 37. I've got the Arturia Polybrute. I've got a Juno 106 from like 1984. So I like to have kind of a blend of software synths, analog synths, software compressors, hardware compressors. I have a lot of guitars. And for me, I do think that hardware synths or hardware preamps or whatever can sound better than what you might get in the box. But it's less about the sonics to me, and it's more about, like, is my brain that day wanting to turn physical knobs? Mm. And so for me, that's a big thing. It's just, like, the workflow of analog gear mixed with digital gear. Because I'm working in Cubase, and I have almost any software that I could ever want. I've got all the stuff from Spectrasonics, all the stuff from Arturia. I've got the Roland Cloud. I've got Serum, Anatu. I've got all the East-West stuff. But it can almost get you into like analysis paralysis, where if I'm just staring at my computer and I'm like, oh, I don't know where to start, I'm just going to go mess around on a guitar or a physical synthesizer. Or if I feel like my vocal's not sounding right, I'm going to revisit my hardware chain. Because I feel like if you can limit yourself just a little bit, just to kind of get that first idea out of there, it can be a little bit easier. So I've kind of built my whole studio around the fact of, if I'm pressed for time and I don't have time to mess around with a bunch of fun analog stuff, I can knock out a song in my DAW in like 2 hours. If I have a day to just mess around and turn knobs, I'm going to be sending my Juno 106 through a bunch of guitar pedals and just seeing what happens and having happy accidents. It's just kind of a different workflow. So I've tried to build my studio to kind of accommodate for whatever my brain feels like doing that day.
I rarely ever mention this, but the DAW that I use is Cakewalk. And
okay.
A lot of people have said, that's for music. Why are you using it for podcasting? And to me, it's if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I've been using it for so many years. Has your DAW always been the same or have you switched over the years?
Basically, Cubase has been the only DAW I've ever used. When I got into doing it in high school, like I mentioned earlier, I was using Mixwave because it was super inexpensive, super simple to learn. But then I transferred to Cubase before I ever went like full time with it. And then I think that was on Cubase 7, and they're on Cubase 14 now. So I've been with them for a long time. Ableton's also really, really cool, but Cubase is my main DAW. I'm a Cubase artist. I work with them all the time now, so I'm probably a little bit biased. But to me, it does everything I could ever want. So I'm kind of like you. I don't want to reinvent the wheel. That's time that I could be using to do something fun and creative and not learn a new DAW. I'm not really interested in that.
Well said. Is there new original music on the way from you? And regardless of your answer, what are you envisioning for yourself as an artist and for Make Pop Music in 2025? Any big plans?
Yeah, I actually do have one release that's scheduled right now. I can't remember. It'll be probably end of February, early March. So that song is completely done, mixed, mastered, ready to be delivered. I have another song that I've been sitting on for like a year that I just haven't gotten around to getting like album artwork and stuff for. So I have a couple releases that I'll probably drop lined up. And then for Make Pop Music, I think we're probably going to be doing like a rebranding. We're keeping our name and everything the same, but we're going to have a designer come in and, you know, give us a really good branding template. We're going to be focusing on probably doing a couple more start to finish courses this year. We'll have a couple more sample packs and preset packs, probably work with a bunch of the companies that we've kind of known and loved for years. I would say that it's going to be an expansion on the things that people kind of have come to know and love from us, but we're not going to be like reinventing ourselves. I don't think we have any plans to drop like massive plugins or anything like that. If you were there for 2023 and 2024, it's going to be a lot more of the things that you know and love.
Who is Make Pop Music best suited for?
My hope is that Make Pop Music is best suited for people who are like me at 19 years old and kind of just sitting in a bedroom with a laptop and a two-channel interface. And they're like, I want to make music and I feel like I have the basic tools and I want to figure out how to incorporate my own creativity and not be limited by the tools that I have or the knowledge that I have. And so for me, I try to focus most of our stuff on beginner to beginner intermediate rather than be one of the channels that's really focused on catering to people that have been in the audio industry for 30 years.
But what about the person who instead of 19 is 39 years old and they're burned out on whatever genre they're doing and they're thinking of totally reinventing themselves and saying, I might actually make pop music. Is Make Pop Music for that 39-year-old?
Absolutely, yeah. I think that part of the reason that I am really into pop music and we've kind of branded Make Pop Music as Make Pop Music is because pop is such a vast term and it allows me to play around with different styles and different genres. So if you're interested in making a country song like, you know, Luke Bryan, you can find something like that on our channel. If you want to make a pop song like Ariana Grande, you can find that. If you want to make an indie song like McGee, you can find that. And so for me, whether you're 13 years old downloading a DAW for the first time or you're 60 and you just retired and you want to pick up music as a hobby, I think that you can probably find something on our channel that will relate to you. And we've kind of done that so everybody feels included. My wife and I are big on inclusivity and trying to make the music industry a little bit less heady, a little bit less exclusive. Musicians and producers can kind of be known for having a little bit of an ego, being a little bit hard to work with. We just want Make Pop Music to be the opposite. I want people to, if it's their first experience with music, have a good one.
Beautiful, beautiful. We're going to close with another one of Austin's original songs, one called Clutch. Before I let you go and we play that track, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Yeah, so I actually picked these two because they're basically the only two songs in my whole catalog that actually sound similar. I do a lot of different genres. I'll do pop. But with Clutch, it was pretty much the same exact story 3 years later. I just wanted to make something fun. I was messing around on an acoustic guitar one day and played a really cool riff that I liked. And so I tracked it up and just had 6 hours that day. And I built the whole track out from start to finish. And I was like looking over the things that I had released. And I was like, what do I want to talk about and write about? And I was like, you know what? 100 Ways did really well. It was all about, you know, being young, going out, hooking up, having fun. I haven't really done that since that song. So I was like, let's do a follow-up. I had done a lot of songs in the previous years about like my struggles with mental health, a lot more serious subject matter, a lot more personal subject matter. So I was like, you know what? I'm ready to write as a character again. And so that's kind of what Clutch was a natural follow-up for people that found and loved 100 Ways to have at least one song that felt similar in my catalog. It is a little bit more focused on guitar and, you know, a little bit more live instrumentation, but it's still that dark pop, R&B, hip hop. And it was really just kind of a thank you to the fans of like, hey, for everybody who's listened to all 3 million people at that time that had like listened to 100 Ways, here's one more track. I don't know if I'll ever make another one like it, but I've got a little bit of time today. So here's what you get.
Am I overthinking the following? Both songs are listed as explicit. Does an artist create a song like that and say, well, maybe I should also release a version that's clean, or walk me through that?
That's a good question. I've actually never thought about releasing a clean version because I'm not interested in radio play or sync or anything like that for my music, especially that. If Love Island wants to use my song, I'll send them a clean version. I'll stem it out clean. That's fine. But for me, I speak pretty explicitly in my normal life. I'm known for having like a sailor's mouth. All of my friends know that they're going to hear a couple swear words out of me. So when I write my music, I feel like I still write it in my voice. And if I were to take that away without having to, I feel like it does strip my voice a little bit. And, you know, you hear it with songs on the radio. Like you hear Cardi B sing a song and then have the radio version. And sometimes the radio version is almost nonsensical because that's not how the song was written.
But help me through that, because it started to sound like you were implying that if a show contacts you and says we want to use it, it started to sound like you were saying it's really not that difficult for me to make it a clean version. But maybe you're saying it's not difficult, but you also have to make sure that the song still doesn't sound ridiculous.
Yeah, so I think if a show wanted to use it, it's not difficult, because to me, like, the song's not the focus there. Like, they're probably going to use the instrumental and have vocals kind of dipping in and out. But if somebody listens to me as an artist and they're coming specifically to hear my song, and that was the purpose of them clicking on it on Spotify, I want it to feel how it felt intentionally when I was like, all right, the song is done and delivered. I know that that kind of limits my audience. I know that some people are off put, but even on our YouTube channel, I'll swear sometimes, or I'll use explicit music, and sometimes we'll get comments where people don't like it. And I completely understand that and appreciate that. But at the same time, I just feel like if I start to be so worried about censoring myself all the time, or having clean versions, I feel like I might start to sanitize my creativity. And that's not to say that like 100 Ways or Clutch or any of my other music is like that deep, besides, you know, a couple songs that focus on my mental health. I just don't want to kind of get into the habit of being like, all right, I need to do this to kind of please everybody. Yeah. And I need to think about if I'm going to say the F word in this chorus. Like, I don't want to care. I just want to make the music.
Great lessons, great insights. Wonderful to have you on the show. Thank you so much for making time to come over and sit with me and be on Now Hear This Entertainment.
Thanks for having me, Bruce. This was so much fun.
You bet. You bet. Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to producer, songwriter, mix engineer, and musical artist Austin Hull. Again, visit his official website at austinhull.com. As I said before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. There is a portfolio page on there that has a long playlist of Austin's original music, which, as I mentioned before, you can find on Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, and more. Do engage with him on social media. I have now followed Austin on Twitter and Instagram. There are links to those and his YouTube channel as well at the bottom of austinhull.com. You also heard him talk about all that he's doing through what is makepopmusic.com. I've mentioned the big numbers it's getting on YouTube, plus there is an Instagram account for that also. For that matter, tell Austin you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really appreciate you tuning in to the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you're still with us at the end of the episode, I'm guessing that you're enjoying what you're hearing, so thank you for sticking around. If you'd like to show your appreciation for the work I put into making this show happen, week after week, year after year, darn near close to almost 11 years with no breaks, I've got an easy way for you to do so. Head over to nhte.net, where you will spot a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. It's not a sponsor, and there's no brand behind it. It's simply a way for you to send a little support my way with a personal message that I will see. Alternatively, you can go directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. Your support means the world to me, and I thank you in advance. That's going to do it for episode 572. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Austin Hull. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Clutch. Got a little baddie in a drop top coupe out front. Swear that she gonna ruin my life or have some fun. I don't think I can escape your clutch. Gripping me tight, but I love your touch. Maybe I can take you to the penthouse right now. Are you down? Henny and ice got me faded, but we can go round till the sun comes up. I just wanna get you out that little blouse right now. Are you down? Tie me up and let me down again. I know all the games you play. You swear you won't come around again, but baby, I can taste the perfume on your neck. Dig your nails all in my back. Cause I'm just another broken heart that you've come to collect. When the money comes, I know that I'll be alone in this bag. Just know that, just know that you was worth it. In the Louis V belt. Say she only drinking if I'm pouring top shelf. She a little bougie, but she better than hell. Swear that she don't need a man, but she coming home with me tonight. Lock the door and dim the lights.
for three times, yeah. I don't think I can escape your clutch. All of these feelings just feel too much. Maybe we can work with all the little doubts right now. Are you down? Tie me up and let me down again. I know all the games you play. You swear you won't come around again. But baby, I can't taste the pain.